Good morning and welcome to Bathurst Spears Broadsides, the September 10th, 2000 edition of Civil Rights in Santa Cruz. Not Nicaragua, and not Los Angeles, and not Washington, right here. Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathurst Spear, Robert Norris, and a rare treat for us in the studios, not away working or playing, is the V-Man, a man who probably more than any other person in Santa Cruz has the inside track on what's going on with free radio and micro-power radio stations throughout the country. Hey there, V-Man.
Good morning, Robert. How are you today?
I'm good, if I can get your levels right there.
Yeah.
Okay. You actually... For those who have been listening for the last half hour, have a new show that you're trying to put together involving cuts from different people's shows that are nationally relevant?
Yeah. It's kind of an idea I've had for a couple of years now, really, is to produce sort of a news magazine, audio magazine-style half-hour update featuring the programmers here at Free Radio. We do a lot of excellent programming over the course of the week, and... I'd like to be able to get some of those pieces and condense it down to the most crucial information and put it together in a half-hour format to be uploaded to the web and redistributed to other radio stations around the country to, you know, just to give Free Radio Santa Cruz more of a national presence.
And this would be stuff that's nationally relevant but also locally pertinent as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll be talking about Santa Cruz stuff.
Sure, absolutely. If there's any kind of major demonstration that programmers cover or, you know, your famous issue of the sleeping ban that has national implications, stuff that, you know, would be of interest to people in different cities, and highlight that. And like I said, condense it down to the most crucial information that's easily digestible for people. And highlight some of the work that we've been doing here.
I think that's a great idea, and of course I think this is probably not only to be limited to programmers. If other folks who've done their own audio work,
absolutely,
like cop watching or their own work that's, I guess we're talking mainly about political and social stuff rather than the more, I guess, generic artistic
art. Right. Yeah. But that has its place too. I mean, the show itself, it really depends on people that contribute to it. I'd kind of like to be more behind the scenes down the road once it comes together a little more, if people from the radio and other people are interested in helping contribute to it, that's really where it's at. Without other people contributing to it, it's nothing, essentially. So the more people that we get to contribute every week, the better it is, and the more diverse it will become. It's, you know, it's like right now, it's just, I just did one show, kind of just to see how it went. I'm pleased with the outcome and would like to continue this project and would like to get others involved.
Now, you also were talking during this half-hour show that we just heard about a rather shocking FCC move on an Austin or San Antonio radio station.
San Marcos.
Station. San Marcos.
Yeah, it's about 30 miles away from Austin.
In Texas.
In Texas, yes.
And this happened, this wasn't a year ago, 5 years ago, or long in the past. This was like, what, this month?
Last Friday, the 1st of September. Kind Radio has been on the air 24 hours a day for about 3.5 years now. And they're also an unlicensed radio station. I think they're 60 watts, and they were operating at 105.9, I believe, in central Texas there in San Marcos. And they have gotten quite a bit of press coverage over the years. They, for some reason, I guess because they smoke pot openly on stage, and anyhow, they've, you know, kind of been in the forefront of the movement. And they went on the offensive right from the get-go when they went on the air. They sent in the FCC $25 and a brief form basically applying for a waiver of the license requirement, and the $25 was, you know, their sort of filing fee, because the FCC has, like, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars in filing fees that they require to just to get a construction permit for a radio station. They don't have any... They did recently implement a plan to offer a license to low-power stations, but prior to this, they had no plan for anything under 100 watts, and so I guess that was their idea, was that it would be, you know, accepted in kind by the FCC. And
how long ago did they make the application? You know?
They about 3.5 years ago when they first came on the air. That was in 1997.
So they tried to be very legal, play by the rules, not step outside the boundaries, at least insofar as they needed to get their information out to the public, but
right.
They applied through the legal process. And, I mean, they were not only, their application was what? It was suddenly, what happened to accelerate this process recently, or was it accelerated?
Well, in the interview, I don't know if you caught that, but Joe Patak was explaining that in July of 1999, they went on the offensive and filed a lawsuit against the FCC, essentially, seeking an injunction from harassment, because the FCC had been coming around and visiting them and threatening them with seizure and fines. So they went on the offensive and filed papers in federal court to basically get an injunction against the FCC. And that, what happened last week on the 1st of September, is the result of that lawsuit. The judge in the case issued summary judgment and sent that in to Kind Radio, informing them of his decision, and he basically granted the FCC a temporary injunction. So,
had the FCC actually applied for a temporary injunction?
Yeah, I guess they did a countersuit against Kind Radio, and Joe Patak is the individual named in that countersuit. He's the operator of the station.
And I guess the judge said stay off the air until a hearing later in September,
right.
At which point we'll tell you to stay off the air forever.
Right, probably. That's probably going to be the outcome at the end of September.
Well, is there a lesson here, Vinny, for radio stations? I know that when I worked with Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, there was always a large debate within the Food Not Bombs membership as to whether to spend a lot of energy trying to work for permits to serve food. Food Not Bombs serves food, as most people know, in public spaces without permits. Vegetarian food. In San Francisco, they did so frequently, like daily and sometimes twice daily, and they became a target for the Agnos administration, the Jordan administration, and now the Brown administration up there, because they dramatized the fact that people who were poor were outside and not being fed and not being clothed and housed and just right there. All this kind of put a damper on the old San Francisco tourist industry. It actually didn't really, but the politicians were afraid it did. Anyway, the idea of working legally through the system was proposed, and the very minute that Food Not Bombs began applying for permits in the summer of 1998 was the time the police suddenly decided to crack down. They've been serving food for, I think, 8 or 9 months before that, but the Food Not Bombs, some parts of the collective, said, hey, let's get legal. And, of course, suddenly they were ruled illegal. I mean, do you think Free Radio has something to learn from that here?
I definitely do. I don't agree with their tactic of going on the offensive like that. It just, you know, you make yourself more visible to them, and they think that you're trying to put them in the public light and call into question their policies and stuff just by going on the offensive that way. And from my perspective, I mean, just take our station, for example. We don't acknowledge the FCC's authority over us. So why go on the offensive? Why file federal paper? I just don't agree with that tactic. So I definitely would, you know, be of the opinion that it's best to just, you know, stay illegal and not bring more attention. We already got attention. We're on the air. You know, it's like, why go through this process of trying to become licensed and legitimized?
We have a caller with us. Hi, caller.
This is Billy Bob's Ears. We got you surrounded right now.
Put your hands
We're
up.
Coming after you next, buddy.
I'm taking off my pants and coming
goddamn
out.
Goddamn media org. Oh, shit. I said goddamn on radio.
You said shit, too.
Well, this foul-mouthed caller, what have you got to say for yourself, caller?
I don't know. I just wanted to call up and razz you guys a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Just
now you
woke me up.
Uh-huh. Well, we're trying to wake the entire country up. You know, that's the deal.
Yes, you are.
Well, so...
I've been listening to free radio for a long time.
And you've been working both on free radio and Food Not Bombs. I mean, you're an old-time slugger, as I remember.
Slugger. Sluggo.
Hey, man. Now you become one of these retiring dads, so I don't know what to say.
If I could ask the caller, what do you think of Robert's question about legitimization?
Legitimization?
If
you
that's
mean
a word.
Licensing for
yeah.
radio?
Yeah. Or even going on the offensive like they did, you know, trying to get a waiver even.
Yeah, well, it's not done us any good. I mean, we haven't even tried, but
yeah.
I know that we've discussed the matter many, many, many a times and decided against it, and we're going into our six-year broadcast. And so we did other things to legitimize it, like legitimize it in the community through
exactly.
the city council, thanks to...
don't say it.
Christopher Crone.
No.
Your favorite politician
that's
of mine.
That's Christopher, no sleeping ban, thank you, or no sleeping ban repeal, Crone. Yeah,
he did do a couple good things, you know, you got to admit that.
Uh-huh. Well, Mike Rodkin has also done some fine things.
Yeah,
well
Rodkin
so
supported
what?
It. The only people that didn't was, what was it,
Big Bird.
Yes.
Cynthia Matthews, sorry.
Matthews and Michael Hernandez walked out like in there was some inner deal going on between them and everybody in the council, and he was pissed and he walked out, so he didn't get to vote on it really. But it passed.
How is Free Radio doing internally? I mean, I notice the usual dues or late signs around, but how's the economic viability? You want to put out a pitch for...
Well, people aren't showing up to meetings.
yes.
Robert.
Yes. Well,
and that's where it all comes down to, because we make decisions, and sometimes people don't like those decisions. And, well, you didn't show up to the meeting, did you?
Well, my Fatherland show was necessary for the Aryan Brotherhood, and I had no opportunity to attend at that time.
That's right. We're going to get Bob Grant on next week.
Well, was there an update, by the way, that you want to make public on how the, I guess there was a kind of a free radio collective meeting on the question of hate speech? Wasn't there something on the afternoon?
Yeah, it's continue,
John,
ongoing.
Do you want to do any kind of report on what came out
well,
of that
I'll
meeting?
Well, I'll say a little bit, and then I'll let you continue with the interview.
Sure.
I got to catch the train.
All right, here. What, you just, no, I'm afraid you got to have some money for a ticket there, bud.
I think that conductor does that on purpose, man. He must listen to the station.
He's just saying hello to all of us.
Anyway, we've had to deal with this issue because our station is changing in so many different ways, and it's changing more into a community-based station, not just the pirate "fuck you," you know, "fuck the FCC" kind of stuff, which we've done and big
deal,
did. It's over.
Shockingly enough.
Yeah, and it's turning more into a community station, and sometimes we've gotten a few programmers that come on. And some of them, yeah, believe it or not, have even gotten into some hate speech on the air or free radio, and the collective itself is not into that and not going to support that. And
decided
to discontinue their shows.
Is that newspeak for censor that? That's what you mean?
No.
Censor, yeah. Well, that's the decision.
Let's be honest here.
The group is going is that we would not like, you know, the KKK on free radio. I mean, they got enough airtime on KSCO, so...
Well, the main speakers at city council seem to be presenting the red line on the homeless as far as bigots go, but... Proceed, yeah.
Yeah, and they have a national broad... You know, Bob Grant is a nationally wide-known racist, and he's on, you know, all these radio stations. And, of course, we got... what's that other asshole that's on during the week?
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh, Laura Schlesinger, all them are homophobic, you know, idealistic people that think that they're right, and they're winning these broadcast awards from the National Association of Broadcasters, who's meeting in the next
September
22nd.
Week and a half.
Yeah.
20th through 23rd, confront the corporate media in the streets up in San Francisco. Any quickly moving aside on that, any place where people should gather? Do you have any caravans planned? Or?
Who, me?
Well, anybody that you know.
I gotta work, dude.
Oh, man.
You know, most of us that run this station have to work full time at our jobs and then run the station. So it's like we don't have time to go chasing after the NAB. We're already doing it. We're
yeah,
on the air,
exactly.
You know?
Our civil disobedience is right here.
So we have some layabouts who aren't going to San Francisco. That's
yeah,
fine.
Layabouts. Yeah, I'm just in for the cash.
If anybody has any information on this deal with the National Association of Broadcasters, I guess there's a large series of protests, according to this postcard posted in the studio, planned from September 20th to the 23rd.
That's right.
And National
Colin Powell is even going to be speaking.
Oh, boy.
His son works for the FCC or something?
Yeah, his son's a commissioner, Michael Powell.
Yeah.
Coincidence? I think not.
Well, again, hate speech, I guess it's not that I want to reopen the debate or discussion about it, because I think probably the three of us, you two and I, hold different views, but what did the collective come up with? What do you think came out of that discussion?
It's still continuing. It's still going on. I mean, we're having these meetings. We can't decide hate speech in one or two meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, like you said, has different views, and if you'd show up to one of these meetings, you could have input too.
I would hate that.
And basically, we're trying to define it, and we're coming up with a mission statement for the station, because you know, we're going in a certain direction, and stations like Pacifica, or not Pacifica, KPFA, have done similar things.
Mm-hmm.
And had to go in certain directions.
Can the public have any input into this, or do you think that's relevant in any way, because they're actually the ones listening? Most people listening are programmers.
Yeah, well, it's mainly programmer run. You know, we're not run by the listeners. Listener supported, like most public stations, well, supposedly public stations are.
Mm-hmm.
We're run by the collective, because, you know, we can't run pledge drives. No one's going to give us any money. So we supported ourselves. Anyway,
right.
I got to go.
Hey.
So I'll take my comments off the air.
Thank you there, Skidmark.
Well, I think, if I may jump in here real quick about the hate speech thing.
Sure.
Really, it's like we're not the U.S. government. You know, the First Amendment, you know, first of all, the First Amendment is a question all of itself. Let's look at who drafted the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. They were slave owners who wanted to be free, who wanted to have freedom of speech, but as long as you were white male over the age of 35 and owned property. So that pretty much wipes out everybody involved in this station, Do you own property?
Actually, the First Amendment applied to anyone over 21.
Okay, sorry.
who was actually a person in the United States. Now, since blacks are only 3/5 of a person, of course, they only got 3/5. Well, actually, no, they weren't considered relevant to that issue. But, the First Amendment is, I think, something you're talking about the suffrage. People didn't have only. You're right. Only whites. I don't think it was over 35. That's to run for president.
Okay.
But I think that there was definitely limited suffrage. But interestingly enough, free speech was something that abolitionists were fighting for over the Southern objection. Southerners wanted to shut the mouths of people who wanted to end slavery. And they had a famous thing called the gag rule, which was the first controversy that happened in the U.S. House of Representatives. But anyway, so I might take a different historical interpretation of that. But please, let's see what a caller
is. Yeah, we have a caller coming in here.
Hey, caller.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's the freedom of speech. Yeah, but the freedom of happiness. I mean, come on. How can you be happy with who you are if somebody's calling you a slur, if somebody's pounding on your origin, if somebody gets down on your social class? How can you be happy in an environment where people do that? And to deny somebody that happiness is the same package deal, man.
Well, of course, I'm not really talking about casting slurs on individuals in a fighting manner, and I don't want to be in a position of, well, I guess I'm letting myself get dragged into this. I really was interested more in what the report was from the collective and see what they were doing. My general view on speech is, I've had Nazis on my show, for instance. I mean, people who were, I don't know if you guys remember, about 3 years ago, I had a fellow who was a homeless person who had talked about his Nazi philosophy and so forth. And
yeah.
That's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it was secondary to the fact that he was a homeless person. I wasn't particularly interested in his Nazi philosophy. I was more interested in his experiences on the streets. But I wouldn't want to censor him in the progress of doing that. On the other hand, if I were assigning airtime to people, I might assign less airtime to one kind of show than to another.
Right. Well, I think it's all about context, too. I mean, you can debate these things on the air, but to be able to just sit behind the microphone and spew out this crap, I would invite somebody that wants to do that to grab a bullhorn, go out on Pacific Avenue in the middle of the tourist season, and face the music. You know, you have free speech out on the streets, but as we're defining it, you know, we run the station.
There are people that do that. There's the Christians. They go and they hand out tracts and preach.
Right, but do you want them to have a radio show? Hell no.
Oh, yeah, but I defend their right to get one, to be able to get one, but I'm definitely not gonna condone or support them.
See, I think that the situation here is, and I think there's a good distinction that's made, is that the argument that if free radio were the only radio station on the air, if we were had a monopoly, then I think you would have to have provision for people of all points of view.
I see that, but you understand where I'm coming from when I state that the happiness, I mean, amendment is also that...
Yeah, caller, what I'm saying, though, is that since the free radio isn't the only station, since for $1,000 and you can get together your own radio station, then that gives other people other options. And the practical fact is, if some people started having shows, if we started to have a national Klan hour on the air... there are some people who probably come and actually, sit in the doorway of the station and cause trouble.
That doesn't make me feel happy. That doesn't lend to my pursuit of happiness.
Everybody has their own definition of happiness
because that is somebody limiting my scope of the people I can choose.
Well, everybody has their own definition of free speech too, and I would say that free speech, that somebody, putting out a bunch of bigoted, hateful statements is not free speech, because my personal definition of free speech would be speech that liberates us, speech that is going to help us be free.
Way to go, man.
And, that kind of stuff is totally enslaving somebody based on skin color, sexual orientation, gender, class, all those things.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
How is that helping us be free?
It don't, man. It doesn't help freedom or happiness.
I think again, what it boils down to try to get these absolute definitions is really kind of risky business. I think that the group of people, if you're, for example, having a forum in your house on a particular subject or something, or you have it at a hall on a subject, then you want people to address that subject. And I suppose somebody can speak about whatever point of view they have on that subject, provided they relate to that subject.
There you go.
But
I can see this too. I can see this. I'm there, but. Yeah, there's a few views that I'm like, I can be seen on, but I'm pretty, I consider myself radical, but there's a few questions I have besides, that are concerns to me, that the other devil on the one on the other shoulder,
Right. Well, listen, I'm going to try to
keep up the good dialogue. I'm really there.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
I'm getting the boot.
All right.
Yeah, I've had just about enough of your kind, V-Man, with your vicious left-wing ideological dogma.
Uh-oh, looks like you've opened up a can of worms here,
though,
Robert.
This is about civil rights in Santa Cruz, and you have no civil rights. Hang on.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hey, baby doll, what's happening?
Uh-oh.
It's the man who is expelled from the radio station. What's your
Merlin in exile.
Hey, Merlin, what's your story?
I just wanted to let people know that I've been listening to this, and, I was listening to Skidmark and what's going on about that, how some DJs have been lost because of hate speech on 96.3, and I was there when some of them were lost, but I want to point out that to the listener that not all the DJs go because of hate speech,
Well, why did this DJ go?
One of the things I heard was too many people in the studio at one time breaking rules, airing voicemail messages that were specifically asked not to be aired.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't hate speech.
Right.
And continued irresponsibility in the radio station.
It wasn't hate speech.
No.
Right,
I don't think
anyone, no one's accusing you of hate speech, nor I mean, perhaps even love speech.
No, I mean, I just didn't want the listeners to think that, every DJ that doesn't go to 96.3 because they were voted out is
a
hate monger or something.
So, do you have any updates on the situation in your trailer park? I know you've been concerned about rights of people around rent control.
I'm going to roll out of here.
I want to thank you, V-Man.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for the update. I guess one last question. Anything people can do about this San Marcos station, the micropower station that's been shut down by the FCC for the lab, at least for the next month?
They go to court the 29th of September. They're looking for people to send letters to the judge. I don't have that address, though, but if you're on the internet, you can check out their webpage and maybe find their address, and that's www.mediadesign.net/KIND. It's www.mediadesign.net/KIND is Kind Radio's webpage.
And if you missed that, you can always give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-4523, the voicemail line, and presumably Vinny or some other folk person will pick it up and give you that again.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being
with
me.
Bye, Merlin.
Hey, take care.
All right, that's the V-Man, whose regularly scheduled show is, let me look over
Wednesday
here. Wednesday at 9, I'm told. So for those of you who want to hear more of the V-Man in the flesh, tune in Wednesday at 9 here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Caller, anything more you want to add before we send you to the happy caller's burial ground?
No, not really. I mean, the last caller I was talking about, I'm not happy. Well, you know, yeah. Hey, be happy. How's the song go? Don't worry, get drunk or something like that?
I have nothing to say about that, but I wish you well, caller. Take
all
care.
Right.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, as I think I have said at least once before in the last 2 minutes. I had hoped to have a caller today from, actually, who now is employed with a business organization in town. I think she, I'm not going to say where she's employed because I want to make sure it's okay with her before I do, but she was homeless for a couple of years, was going to give us sort of some description of life around the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. Unfortunately, the number she gave me was her fax number. I guess that shows you how far forward she's come. I got a fax number instead of a phone number. Maybe I can get the actual phone number for a future show. Interesting interview. Hope to have it. I'm going to be talking, too, with my programmer, Becky Johnson, who was caught with notebook and camera invading the Kennedy kickoff rally. That's Scott Kennedy, former city council member and mayor, author of the Ask for a Dime After Dark, Get a $162 Ticket anti-panhandling bill in 1994, as well as a host of other bad pieces of anti-homeless legislation. However, he's decided he's thrown his crown into the ring again, and last Friday, did his kickoff rally downtown. I'm hoping she'll give me a call, and we can do a little talking about that. I have an incoming call. Perhaps that's her. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Fuck your panhandling laws! Fuck Rob! Fuck Billy!
Well, that's a pretty clearly expressed view, but a little too loud there, caller. You're kind of distorting. It could be the same caller calling in again. Remember, we only allow two calls, so you get two shots at us per show there. Hang on. You're on Free Radio?
Yeah, I think that last caller was just trying to demonstrate a little example of hate speech over there.
Well, no, actually, that would regard that as politically acceptable, because I also would say fuck those panhandling laws. Just, he was a little loud, that's all.
That's
a very good point, caller, because
you see... The object of your hate, it depends.
Well, I think we must hate injustice, and we must hate poverty, and we must hate abusive behavior by police agencies and government, and that's why I'm a little concerned that if you start criminalizing one form of hate speech, then other people say, oh, you don't want to be too critical about the city council.
It's a slippery slope.
Right, and I know that that's really the subject of a whole different discussion. But hey there, Becky. We are talking, of course, to Becky Johnson, who's a video journalist with Community Television, and you've also done some freelance work. I guess you were freelancing yesterday when you took your video camera to the Kennedy rally on Friday.
Well, I try to keep up with local issues and events, and I did a little taping there at the Scott Kennedy kickoff at Abbott Square.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, quite a turnout, mostly elderly people. I thought that if you took the average age of people that turned out for Scott Kennedy, it was much, much of an older crowd.
This was downtown, actually the first kind of public deal that has been had. We've had several candidates doing their rallies. We've had, I guess, Dick Dubrava. We've had Scott Bugenthal. Ed Porter, who didn't invite me to his rally, had his rally, I guess, some time ago. And I guess Steve Argue's rally is coming up, I guess it's 2 weeks from today he's going to be doing his rally, and that'll be in Loudon Nelson Park.
It's actually Laurel Park.
Next to the Loudon Nelson Center,
yeah.
So this was really the first public rally of a candidate, and it actually had, I think it had three or four different food tables. It had, it was held in the area where that Cooper House Cafe usually is, the cafe on Cooper Street, right?
Yeah, right next to the Octagon Museum there.
Half a block from the Cinema 9 movie theater.
And behind the Opera House, I guess.
Steve Argue, of course, the city council candidate was not allowed to go there because he has been jailed, he had been jailed for 7 months and then been given probation and a stay-away order from the area where he, I guess it's the McPherson,
oh, the McPherson Center.
I think he was given a stay-away order. At least I heard that from activist Tim Rinker, who was there.
Yeah, I'm not clear about that.
So
I know that they were talking about having extensive stay-away orders for Steve Argue
so
for
we
the
know
entire
that,
downtown area.
You know, we know that
that was never granted.
Right. We know that Kennedy refused to come on the air and face critics here on this show a couple of weeks ago after specifically scheduling his fifth appearance on the air.
His fifth
no-show. And I know that he also, I'm sure he arranged the location of where his rally was, so perhaps he knew that Steve Argue would be one of the people banned from coming to his rally. Actually, I doubt it, but perhaps he can call up and clarify if he's listening. Maybe we can get him to call in.
When I spoke to Scott at his home when he was supposed to be in your studio, he had the flu, which is why he didn't attend. But, of course, that doesn't explain why he didn't call and say that he would need to reschedule because he had the flu. He just sort of didn't show up.
Right, and he didn't reschedule either, as far as I know.
He said he'd be happy to reschedule.
Right, happy. He seemed full of ebullient happiness on Friday, and he also, of course, I saw him Thursday along with 9 other of the 15 candidates who showed up at the Voices from the Village show, in which was televised, I guess, both then and then either in whole or part last night. But I think that, you know, the question arises for me, why give any attention to Kennedy whatsoever? He's a loser. We've seen the specifics against him arrayed in detail 2 years ago. He's a supporter of the Beach South of Laurel, Seaside he's Canfield's man, you know, in the city council is one way of looking at it. He and Rodkin, you know, proceeded to do that deal to divvy up the whole scene. But the reason I asked you to talk about this is because there were a lot of people, some of whom I know, who really sincerely believe that Kennedy has done a lot for homeless rights and affordable housing.
Yeah,
and
I saw several people there that I've also worked with when I was on the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. There were several people who had been fellow board members with me, and they are under the impression that Scott Kennedy has a very good record on homelessness, that he was instrumental in setting up the Homeless Services Center, and has been someone that they've been able to count on in the past. That is their impression.
Yeah, what I'm saying here is that I have a problem because I don't like to join the pack of what I call scandidates or Green Party favorites or people who are running at the head of the, and probably going to be elected in the 4 vacant seats in November for the Santa Cruz City Council, because other than Steve Argue, and I guess there are a few other people that I like some of the positions of, no one is talking about or much less supporting the real issues around rent control, around stopping the investment of huge amounts of money into essentially evicting Hispanic tenants on the street in the Dolphin deal and providing affordable housing for a smaller fraction of them. No one's talking about really, I guess some people are talking about meaningful sleeping ban approaches in some ways.
I think we've made some progress on the sleeping ban.
That's the one issue. But generally, you know, Scott Kennedy is the boogeyman. I saw people like Sandy Brown, who I guess is treasurer for Scott Bugenthal's campaign. I saw people like Don Burke, sort of a crony of Mayor Keith Sugar. I saw, you know, these people.
I don't think you can assume that because people were there that they're necessarily supporters.
Wait a minute. That's not what I'm saying. Becky. I'm saying I'm saying these are the people that want to diss the Kennedy campaign, but also want to evade real issues in the campaign because their own candidates are not taking a strong stand on them. Because we found last election, for instance, when we all kind of clumped behind Fitzmaurice, Cronin, Sugar, that they ended up selling people out repeatedly on police review, on city council process, on affordable housing, on changing the staff so the staff of the city would actually start to represent people, on the sleeping ban. I mean, it's almost every issue. It's hard to think of an issue that they haven't sold people out on. I asked, for example, Fred Geiger to give me a listing of the achievements of this city council, and I still am not really too clear on what those achievements are. So the reason I'm talking to you about Scott Kennedy is not to pack with the Ed Porters, the Scott Bugenthals, the Dick Dubravas and Emily Rileys and Arnie Leffs. It's not that I don't, nor am I saying that all their positions are bad. I'm just saying I'm not in any way convinced that these people are going to make a significant change in city council. But Kennedy is so bad, he deserves special mention, and that's why I'm encouraging you to press on. I'm going to shut up now so you can actually give a report on what happened.
Well, you described him as a loser, but he's not. He is very likely to prevail and get his council seat back, mostly due to that he has huge name recognition. People know who Scott Kennedy is. They have positive associations with him because of his work with the Resource Center for Nonviolence. And indeed, he has done very good work with the Resource Center. If you look at what he's done, you know, nationally and internationally on issues that are far from the city limits of Santa Cruz. However, for any of us who are considering voting for Scott Kennedy, we're concerned about what kind of council member he would be, and of course we expect more of the same. And Kennedy's record really gives us pause for any serious consideration for putting him on the council. I was able to talk to his very youthful campaign manager, and who's only been in Santa Cruz for 2 years. So it's not like he was even in town when Scott was on the council. He had virtually no idea what the beach south of Laurel plan was. And so I sort of confronted him. I said, well, you know, Scott seems to represent, you know, the Seaside Company in his negotiations with city council. And we really need a candidate who's going to represent the interests of the citizens of Santa Cruz. He keeps talking about we have to support these funding engines for the city of Santa Cruz. And, of course, we're talking about very large contributors to the tax base for the city. However, the Seaside Company, if you look on a list of the top 25 contributors to the tax base of Santa Cruz, the Seaside Company comes in 24th on that list. And I think that's very surprising to people because the Seaside Company and the Boardwalk get 3.2 million visitors per year. And we're not getting very much in terms of revenue for the city coffers from the Seaside Company. The BSAW plan, which Scott Kennedy supported and, really vilified anyone who was against it, would have destroyed 162 units of housing, possibly to rebuild 28 units, would have used $15 million of city money to realign 3rd Street just to create an area for the boardwalk to expand its amusement park. Just a total corporate welfare giveaway. And Scott Kennedy was the chief cheerleader for this plan. The plan would have rezoned residential space and set up to commercial space. And I think that anybody who lives in the city knows that the city of Santa Cruz is not hurting, that we don't have enough commercial space, that we don't have enough buildings that are in commercial zones. I can think of half a dozen examples of empty commercial buildings that have been empty for, you know, 1 or 2 years with 4 lease signs on them that are available for commercial use. However, residential use, that is just probably the most crisis point in the entire city of Santa Cruz history in terms of need for housing for its citizens, for the student population at UCSC. The high prices of rents and escalating real estate for residential property are reflected in that there's a huge demand and insufficient supply. So Scott seems to have it 100% back asswards on what he's supposed to be doing, lobbying on behalf of the citizens of Santa Cruz to create more housing. His past policies show he is not. I also talked to this, I can't remember his name, his campaign manager. I said, well, you know, he's been, you know, he authorized that huge overrun on the police station that ended, I think they originally slated that the new police headquarters would be built for $7 million. It ended up, $13.5 million. Huge cost overruns. Scott Kennedy put his rubber stamp on all those cost overruns. He didn't have any problem just funneling money like crazy to the police department.
As did, of course, Crone, Sugar, Byers, Fitzmaurice, and every other council member, we should say that.
Yeah, I didn't see any of them that even questioned the overruns on the police station.
And indeed, I mean, Byers at least took an opposition position way back when against the beach south of Laurel, and Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, of course, ran against the beach south of Laurel plan. Now, of course, they're all packed together, I guess Crone sort of separating somewhat from the pack, but not clearly, on the issue of destroying affordable housing in the beach flats through evicting the Dolphin tenants with no guarantees or turning them over to the Mercy Charities Housing without any promises that they will be able to retain their tenancy. Go ahead with your analysis of Kennedy. I just want to throw that in.
Oh, okay, kind of
break things up.
Yeah, just kind of to test and see if I can maintain my train of thought
or not. Can you? That's the good question. We'll see when the next train comes through.
I also want to comment about the brand new huge parking lot structure at the corner of Front and Soquel. That's another example of huge cost overruns to basically provide parking spaces for the downtown merchants at public expense. And, of course, the public will also be charged to use these facilities.
Not to mention anti-homeless architecture. You might want to comment on that.
I actually parked in that structure the other day for the first time. One thing I noticed is it's one of these parking lots where if you go and you park, your vehicle is on a slant. It's you can't park on a level spot. In it's designed that way. So if we were to use that particular structure for nighttime sleeping for homeless people, they would be very uncomfortable with a vehicle that's parked on a slant. I believe that there was actual discussion at the council about creating designs, architectural designs, that discouraged people from loitering or sitting or sheltering themselves in that parking structure. There were efforts to make it non-human friendly. Just another example of the the rule of the automobile, even in progressive city politics.
Well, they also wanted to make sure that people did not find places to loiter, linger, and congregate in these structures. That's what I really was referring to. I mean, what you're saying is quite true. The slanting nature of the floor makes it difficult to use that as a car park. But I think that I was thinking of the fact that they were actually writing into their architectural directions proposals to discourage poor people from being able to use the structure, you know, for anything else other than parking.
Really? I mean, the parking lot was designed to be useful to credit card carrying shoppers and virtually no one else. Scott Kennedy was one of the promoters of that parking structure and one of that repeatedly voted for the numerous cost overruns that structure cost. It was the same contractor built that parking structure as the new police station.
Was this a union contractor, do we know?
I don't know about the union work, but I know that they're not a local contractor, that they were from over the hill.
So you kind of mixed it up with the Scott Kennedy's youthful campaign manager, tried to educate him on...
I said that Scott
issues.
Had a bad record as far as control of, dealing with police abuse and police violence. And he says, well, wait a minute, Scott Kennedy was one of the founders of the Citizens Police Review Board, and I said, well, yes, if he wants to take credit for that, but he was instrumental in making sure that the Citizens Police Review Board had no authority other than to issue reports after the fact, and if you look at the design of the Citizens Police Review Board, if the Citizens Police Review Board sustains a complaint against an officer, they send that report to Police Chief Belcher, and Police Chief Belcher can discipline that officer or not as he chooses, and he doesn't even have to report back to them what action was taken.
Review, which I think is a maze. You can really look at Kennedy's action when actual police abuse happened, before there was a Citizens Police Review Board, actually just a month or two before there was. That was in the famous police riot downtown of May of 1994, when they moved to enforce the Kennedy sitting ban. Scott Kennedy supported a law making it illegal for people to sit down anywhere on any sidewalk downtown, with the exception, I guess, of some emergency.
I think that that's one of the most ironic examples of the Kennedy record.
Right, but let me say about police abuse. What I'm trying to say here is that his record there was when one man had his ribs broken, another woman miscarried after being hit with a police baton. We brought this up in a lengthy public hearing with him. He took no action, and I guess it was years later said he had never heard that the matter had even been discussed. Kennedy is the one.
I think, wasn't he denied that he knew that the woman had miscarried?
Believe so.
Yeah.
And he did not,
Selective amnesia on Scott Kennedy's part.
He was not interested in pursuing serious allegations of police misconduct in any meaningful way, and he set up this bogus police review board with a mediation process that is unworkable, unusable, and the police actually veto whenever it's proposed, and I proposed mediation at different times. Kennedy is a essentially pro-police person who we saw at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, the group that he's gotten a lot of credit for, moved in and split the Resource Center down the middle by inviting police in with guns on, which upset Doug Rand and others.
Yeah, he lobbied to get a $15,000 COPS grant from the Justice Department, which some of us described as using the Resource Center staff to be doing surveillance on neighborhood groups and reporting back to the police. We said, what is this, snitches for the cops?
And remember, what we're talking about is the drug war. That's really what this is all about. We're not talking about trying to look out for other people who are being beaten by people or being robbed per se directly. We're talking about CNET operations along the waterfront, which, by the way, Kennedy, along with the rest of the council, made illegal to be on the riverbank, after dark. It's now a crime to walk along the riverbank.
Yeah, the river levee curfew, which Scott supported. I guess Belcher had said, Police Chief Belcher had said that they needed this curfew because they're having trouble with gangs and drug dealers. And just kind of a general vague comment, like there weren't gangs or drug dealers in all kinds of places all around various parts of the city.
Right, but I think we should also note that not one single council member on the city council, the great new progressives who rode in the wave of anti-Kennedy, anti-Rotkin, anti-Charlie Canfield, anti-Boardwalk sentiment in 1998, had anything to say about ending this curfew, about stopping the drug war. We have not heard word one from Mayor Sugar,
Kennedy,
Christopher Crum, or anybody else around this issue. And see, I think this is equally important, because had Sugar and Crum spoken out on this, you'd have candidates now coming out of the woodwork and saying they oppose the drug war and talking about cutting back our police's participation in that, and not one of them has. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you should be sorry.
But I'm not that sorry.
No, you're not that sorry. Let's see, I wanted to comment about going back to the sitting ban. I think this is really ironic because Scott Kennedy, in his position at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, has indicated that one of the people that he really admires most throughout history has been Mahatma Gandhi and his practice of nonviolent non-cooperation in order to achieve social justice, and guided by Gandhi, and yet now this is Mahatma Gandhi later in his life disavowed all his material possessions and did what some of the priests do in that culture, where they set up a begging bowl.
So he was accused of sleeping with 13-year-old virgins to test his chastity or his self-control, a fact claimed by Arthur Koestler, by the way.
Well, can I, that's such a non sequitur. Can I?
Not at all. Go ahead. I just
want to hear. Where you put out the begging bowl between, say 10 and 12 in the morning, and if people put food in your dish, then you would eat that day, and if they didn't, you just wouldn't eat that day. Mm-hmm. It's a very Spartan lifestyle and non-materialistic.
And Kennedy passed the no panhandling laws.
The panhandling law, which Kennedy engineered and supported, makes it illegal to ask for food at anywhere, after dark, anywhere in the city. It makes it illegal to ask for spare change in groups of two. Makes it illegal to ask for spare change from a sitting position.
That's any time of the day or night.
Makes it illegal to ask for spare change within 50 feet of an ATM. Makes it illegal to ask for spare change closer than 3 feet from a person. Just huge amount of restrictions, and actually a nighttime prohibition entirely, as though people wouldn't need things that, between...
This is a law that originally Kennedy put together because he decided to form a new alliance with the business community, and he also decided that this became the first anti-homeless law of its kind in the state of California. It was being considered by Berkeley, but there was so much protest against it that it was postponed and actually got put on the ballot. Kennedy refused to have this law put on the ballot for citizen vote. That was another thing we asked him to do, and he refused to do. One has to say, none of the sitting council members have taken any action to reverse or change this law. That is, none of them have been in any public advocacy positions to change this law. So my suggestion to people listening here is, when you talk to the city council candidates, and there's a list of their phone numbers at the city clerk's office, you ask them, what are they going to do about the drug war locally? What are they going to do about these anti-homeless ordinances? We have a whole series of forums coming up that I'm going to read you a list of.
The curfew on the levee. The youth curfew. Can I speak about that?
Sure, briefly, because I got a roll. But
Kennedy supported the youth curfew in the city of Santa Cruz, which did pass. Again, it was something the police asked for and got. And he said at the time that they had earmarked $250,000 for a teen center, and this was somehow going to mitigate that that young people wouldn't be allowed outside after 11. When the shoulder tap law came up for discussion, Catherine Byers also brought up their fund for the teen center, still not built 2 years later. And she said there was $125,000 in that account. So somebody rifled that teen center money in the meantime.
Has anybody checked Chief Belcher's safe lately?
Or maybe Art Danner's slush fund.
There's something coming up at noon that I think our audience should know about if they don't already. That's the Arnie Leff kickoff rally. I think we should kick him way off with this rally. Arnie is a nice guy, a doctor who has got good positions on medical marijuana, and a sweet enough fellow when you talk to him, and he's a landlord locally.
If you look at his campaign literature, it's very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of his past and so forth, and he's, but then we start learning, and as you've heard if you've listened to my show, that Arnie Leff has been the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board in a period of time when it actually has had power to make changes in policy and has refused to do so, has had power to reopen the Happy John Dine slaying by police back in 1997, but refused to do so.
Well, they can't even get around to the Brian Andrus complaint, which was filed in March of 98.
He has been a horrible head of the Citizens Police Review Board. You might say about as horrible as the previous heads, but given the fact that he was appointed by the liberal or the new progressive left-wing city council that supposedly came in 1998, he has been, his record is really inexcusable. And when he was asked to discuss this, he had no criticisms of the police department whatsoever he wanted to make public after 2 years on the Citizens Police Review Board. And I find that breathtaking. That
well, I think his record as chair of the Citizens Police Review Board is not, does not brood well for if he gets on the council.
Does not bode well at all, no.
Yeah, he's very dictatorial on that board. It's kind of a one-man board. He does the agendas. He only puts items on the agenda that he wants to. We've heard of other members have been trying to put items on the agenda, and he won't schedule them. And he takes a lot of unilateral actions, tabling items without getting the approval of his fellow board members. And, of course, their dismal record on sustaining complaints, 61 complaints and 4 sustained.
Right, and then, of course, when they do a good thing, like when they told Chief Belcher that he failed to adequately train his sergeants not to arrest people for selling the street newspaper Street Spirit, because newspapers are legally allowed to be sold on the streets even without a permit, Arnie Leff apologized to the police chief for misstating this and said that the chief hadn't been wrong.
He called it a flub.
So any attempt to criticize the police department has been soft-pedaled or nullified or set aside, and this is not the kind of person that you want or can expect to come out swinging for issues around meaningful change and control of the community police, like let's end the lethal force policy, let's eliminate the pepper spray, let's get the dogs, police dogs, off the mall. We haven't seen them there lately, but I used to see Officer Brandt walking up and down with his German Shepherd dog on the mall, you know, and I'm not aware that policy has been officially changed. Let's have police documents, public records, so that you don't have to pay $64 to get a copy of a report. But what I really want to say, Becky, is that Arnie Leff has a kickoff rally today. I guess it starts at noon. It just started a few moments ago, and it's at the Adobe, which is near Mission Plaza up near Holy Cross Church. And it's open to the public, and I encourage people to go there and to tell Arnie, look, Arnie, unless you've changed your position, we really don't want you. I know that sounds kind of like a harsh thing to do at a kickoff rally. Everybody's supposed to be schmoozing, and I admit I didn't do that on Friday with Scott Kennedy, although I did wear a Kennedy no button, no on Kennedy. I guess that might have, you know, raised a few eyebrows. But Leff really needs to be told to go take a hike. Go, you know, go learn something. Stop using the Citizens Police Review Board as a stepping stool to get to the Hernandez method. Like Michael Hernandez, who previously was on the Citizens Police Review Board, the Kennedy appointee, I might add, who was then elevated to city council based on nothing and his Hispanic skin color, which I think DiCenzo aptly satirizes in this last week's Metro. Anyway, this is happening, I want to remind you, for 3 hours. There's free food there, actually, you know, 12 to 3 today. I'm going to be going after my show when it ends at 1:30. I invite every listener to come on down and tell Arnie that, you know, it's time for you to take some action on the Police Review Board. It's time for you to come out for some meaningful change. And frankly, it would be hard to believe Arnie if he did, because it would be such a change of his disposition. It's like Scott Kennedy suddenly coming out for civil rights. I mean,
the thing that disturbed me the most about, if I could pick a single thing about Arnie Leff's record on the Citizens Police Review Board, was when he decided to stop people who are speaking at public comment from using the names of officers in a sentence. And he repeatedly interrupted speakers and told them not to use the name of an officer, that they should just refer to him a police officer, officer who works downtown, service officer.
Under Arnie's leadership, public participation in the Citizens Police Review Board has dropped to virtually nothing. Nobody shows up at the meetings. I avoided them for 6 months. I went back only recently to see this bogus committee, which he delayed involvement with and has scheduled no new meeting for, that was supposed to strengthen the laws that control the police department. But there's been no meeting scheduled, just a $10,000 attorney, Bob Aronson, on retainer from Palo Alto, sucking at the public trough on this issue. There's been no new staff member for the Citizens Police Review Board hired. They're going through a process which is months late. Arnie could have influenced this process by demanding there be some action or publicly dealing
as far
with
as
it.
Keeping,
no way.
Keeping staff for his own department.
In most recent,
can I speak here?
Go ahead.
It would have made sense for them to hire a staff person a little bit before Gary left, so that Gary Yamani could train the new staff person.
Right, and then of course the latest deal where.
They just didn't do that.
The latest deal where the board refused to was late in scheduling a complaint against the police chief. So even though I filed it in a timely manner, it is not a legal complaint because the board screwed up in one of his real flubs without any apologies to me. I haven't received a letter from the board apologizing. I have not received a phone call from Arnie Leff saying, gee, Robert, we really screwed up here. We'll make it up in this way to you and the public. Not a word. Police Chief Belcher, of course, the complaint I had to do with his, again, refusing to allow people to sell street newspapers through attacking Steve Argue, who was selling street newspapers, sending him to jail through his officers and not having his officers accountable on these issues. So Leff is a man, you should go down there, and I think you should sample some of his food, and I think you should tell him, nice spread, but you do better as a worker, as a doctor for medical marijuana. I can fully support you in that, but I will not support you as a Citizens Police Review Board chief or as a city council member. And that, I think, is an honest and fair thing to say. Becky, anything you want to conclude with? I'm going to have to run. We've been doing this for about half an hour now.
Yeah, I recommend to the voters of the city of Santa Cruz a bullet ballot for Steve Argue. And if you don't know what a bullet ballot is, that's where you vote for one. Even though you have four choices, you can vote for up to four candidates. Vote just for Steve and no others. It'll make your vote count a lot more, and it'll count against the other candidates.
I think Steve Argue also has a meeting for those who want to be a part of that process next Saturday at 5 o'clock in Loudoun Nelson Park or Laurel Park, whatever you want to call it. And that, and his phone number, if you want to reach him, is 457-9754 extension. Is it 1169?
Yes, that is. 1169.
And if you miss any of these numbers on the air, again, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call to pick up on the proper number.
And I will be monitoring that number throughout the show.
And
so
we are, of course.
So if people want to talk to me off air,
we are talking
when
to
I get off.
I'm trying to get Becky Johnson off the air.
Yeah, when
she is
when
our producer, and I am going to hang up on her now. Thank you, Becky, for being with us.
Sure.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we have another phone call coming in. Here it is. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert Bernard.
Hi, Bernard.
Hi, you know, I just wanted to correct you, you know, on Stephen Argue. One thing is, his meeting is going to be next Sunday at 5 o'clock.
Next Saturday, I understand.
No, we're all going to be in San Francisco.
Oh, thank you very much.
For
I apologize.
For Baba Jamal at Dolores Park.
We did have one yesterday on Saturday, but I guess we're moving it to Sunday, right?
Well, just for this one weekend because of our Saturday commitment to Baba Jamal.
So how is the Argue for Council campaign going? You're a kind of a stalwart there. You're the treasurer of the campaign?
Right. I think it's, you know, from what I can see, you know, and I don't pretend to see the whole, you know, the whole gestalt, I would say it's going slowly. But I think it's going to, you know, pick up speed when we do more outreach.
You know, Bernard, you're also a member of the Green Party, and yesterday...
No, I'm not. I'm a member of the Peace and Freedom Party.
I'm sorry. I saw you at the Green Party
deal
yesterday.
Right, I just
yesterday.
Went there to see their process.
Right, or lack of process, as the case may be.
Whatever.
You know, I guess, well, then, you're not a Green Party member. Maybe David Silva will call in, or maybe we can call him to get an update. But I just want to say, get your impression of what happened with the Greens chose their candidates yesterday. They chose their endorsements, and they ended up endorsing Bonnie Moore, who's a bus driver, Scott Bugenthal, Arnie Leff, and Ed Porter. And I was just, frankly, disgusted with the process that they used, although I think what they did was they formed a committee of four people that I like and trust to actually investigate and interview all 15 candidates. But then they did not present in any clear form the answers that came from the candidates on key issues in a way that the Green Party members could look at them or the public could look at them and make some decisions about who would be the best candidate. It almost seemed the same kind of process that SCAN uses, which seems to be they choose the inner circles of SCAN, chooses the candidates they like, Ed Porter, Emily Riley, Dick DeBrava, maybe Scott Bugenthal, or Arnie Leff, one of the two. And the Green Party does the same. It picks its two Green Party members, Scott Bugenthal and Arnie Leff, and then just passes them. There was no, for example, vote on other candidates. David Silva pressed the recommendations of their subcommittee, and their subcommittee had no information for the people out in the Green Party as to what the actual answers of the candidates were in any specific way. Did you notice that?
That's right. I was a little alarmed at that type of procedure. I don't think I would allow that to go on, you know, in the Peace and Freedom Party without some real fight. I had no problem with them doing the interviews. I would have liked to see, you know, their answers put out in some type of discussion, and then, you know, some real discussion, you know, what these candidates represent. And then the people as a whole, you know, vote on each nomination as opposed to, you know, recommendations, you know, coming from, you know, some kind of elite committee. And even though I like the people on that elite committee, I like them very much, but I just don't think that that's the way the Green Party should be structuring it. However, I'm not a Green Party member.
Nor am I.
They have to be accountable to me.
Well, it is true that the parties that claim to speak for environmental causes and human rights and, you know, bring Ralph Nader to town, and then Ralph doesn't say anything about the sleeping ban whatsoever and schmoozes with local public officials instead, the same public officials that have killed any sleeping ban reform, one becomes concerned that you're seeing just an old power game under a new name. That kind of concerns me.
Yeah, that's true. So I have a question for you, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like if I let's go back to Arnie Leff. You know, I feel very pissed off at Arnie.
Arnie, of course,
he should not be. He shouldn't be running for city council, and he knows it. You know, he's done nothing, you know, that I'm aware of.
Well, remember, Arnie Leff is a friend of Scott Kennedy. In fact, I saw him at the Scott Kennedy rally.
That's right. He was there.
I even recorded an interview with him. Now, he did not have a Scott Kennedy button on. He just said he was coming as a friend of Scott Kennedy. But I'm not sure what that means, if not in some way to support the Kennedy candidacy. And the Kennedy candidacy would actually fit very well in with Arnie Leff's policy of pro-police behavior. I mean, he's actually, he doesn't say he sides with the police when you talk to him. In fact, I really believe in somewhere in his heart he doesn't. He wants to see real police reform. But he is so, the word has to be, gutless, timid, compromising on these issues, unwilling to publicly advocate. He sees his role as sort of a behind-the-scenes diplomat. I, frankly, am just sick of this kind of position, and I don't think it leads to successful change.
I know that. Have you asked him to come on your show for a debate, any kind of debate?
Arnie Leff?
Yes.
You know, I don't know if my producers called him and asked him, but of course, we can't ask him today because he's at his rally, which, again, I remind people, is at Mission Plaza, which is right off of the Mission Park at the top of the hill there, and open to the public from 12 to 3 at the Adobe, the old church.
One thing,
up there.
You know, that dear Becky didn't do, at least I didn't hear it if she did do it, is she didn't tell about what Kennedy had to say, you know, that, you know, at that...
On Friday,
you know, she talked all about his record, but she didn't talk about what he had to say, you know, on Friday. Well, did he say anything?
Well, I recorded his speech. Um, I I'm always reluctant to play, just like a Rotkin speech. I don't like to play a Kennedy speech because...
What did he say?
He's against district elections, for instance, to name one issue, but he doesn't mind having the support of people who are for district elections. Kennedy also, I think, likes to claim credit for things that are not there. So, for example, there was a huge sign giving the list of supporters of people, and one of them, supposedly of his supporters, was Linda LeMaster. I am quite sure Linda LeMaster is not a supporter of his. Maybe at one time in the past she supported him. Similarly, he had Michael Schmidt as a supporter. Schmidt spoke very critically of Kennedy recently. I don't think he's currently a supporter of Kennedy's. I think Kennedy has a streak of intellectual dishonesty which runs very deep. And you see that by his behavior with David Silva when he sat on a committee to end the sleeping ban back in the... Yes, you do, but unfortunately the membership does not. I'm sorry, not the membership. The people out there may not know this, that Kennedy sabotaged this. He claimed to support ending the sleeping ban. Indeed, he came to our protest and told us he claimed to support ending the whole camping ban, but once at City Council, he did nothing about it and supported more anti-homeless legislation. And in the course of the summer, he essentially destroyed a process by not showing up at meetings, by making false promises to show up as he'd promised to show up here on the radio station. So I don't think Kennedy is an intellectually honest person.
Well, that could be true, but I'm just curious. Did people ask him questions there?
No.
There was no question?
No, it was a lovey-dovey rally with Rotkin speaking and Kennedy speaking. And I'd be happy to play you the tape later. And if I get a lot of calls asking, I will play the Kennedy tape. But I just don't want to waste time on it.
I know, I hear you. So let's go back to Arnie Left for a moment. Question, you know... So let's just say I went over there to Arnie Left and I just tell him, hey, don't run. You know, you're for shit. You're for nothing.
Well, be specific.
Do you think that will mean anything to him?
Well, I think what you got to do is you got to get a group of people around him and ask him some questions. Arnie, I would honestly, as an advocate of Real Police Review, ask you not to run for the following reasons. And you should have a list of 5 or 6 clear reasons. I can give them to you what I think my reasons. I have actually 30 or 40 good reasons why Arnie Left shouldn't run. But, you know, certainly... The most obvious ones are is that he has not done a good job as Citizens Police Review Board Chief. Why should we expect he'd be any better a job as City Council member, particularly around issues on which he has his expertise in the police? He has seen the police in action. He has taken no action on a number of issues, including the Happy John Dine shooting, and including real strong public protest about closing down the investigation of the May 1999 police mini-riot outside the McPherson Center where they attacked people after the Yugoslavia bombing protest. He has delayed for months and months and months, along with Mayor Sugar, several years, any changes in the laws that would strengthen the Citizens Police Review Board. He has not held a meeting at all of the Ordinance Committee of his Citizens Police Review Board that might have actually done something in the last year and a half. He is a person who, for all the reasons you heard, I think Becky talk about too, we've seen Pete Sugar do horrible things at City Council, cutting people off, arresting people without cause, cutting short oral communications. This is the kind of thing that Arnie Leff has also done at the Citizens Police Review Board, though I have to say I think Leff is probably better than Sugar, but the tendency to unilateral action, the tendency to assure people like Kennedy does and then break his word later, not do what he said he's going to do, is, I think, a strong thing in Leff. And also, I think Leff is a friend of Kennedy's. I think Leff is part of the Kennedy-Rotkin faction, really, and I think that the Green Party has been completely bamboozled. Nobody talked about police review at that meeting yesterday when he was discussed. Nobody asked any really meaningful questions about police review, even from our fine star questioners. So I would say... The thing to do is to say you should really talk to the liberals in that group who are concerned about Real Police Review and tell them your experiences, because you've been to these police review board meetings. You were at the last one. In fact, what I'm going to do now after this call is I'm going to play for you the last meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board, which was a closed meeting.
Good.
And I think your testimony may have been there as well.
So he's going to be at the Mission Plaza from 1 to 3.
Right, he's not at the Mission Plaza. He's off the Mission Plaza at a thing called the Adobe,
okay,
which is down the first street to the right as you come, as you go along the side of the Mission Plaza. It's the old Adobe Mission where, you know, they...
Is it next to the Catholic Church?
I think it's... I think it's toward the...
Or the Buddhist temple.
You know, I don't know where the Buddhist temple is, but I've been told as you come up the hill, you turn on Mission onto the Mission Plaza, and then the first street to the right, you go down, and that's the Adobe down there.
Okay. Well, I'll try to meet you over there afterwards.
And anybody is welcome, should come on over, and I thank you for your call, Bernard.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Where do all presidents go? Leave the ones from GOP. Where do they meet to eat in secret? Where can they really be free? Where was the A-bomb cooked up? Where's this He-Man treasure trove? My favorite men club, Bohemian Grove. Oh, we've had a Rockefeller, Kissinger, Nixon, and Ford, Weinberger, Trump, Reagan, and Bush. God forbid the world court should come in with a arrest warrant for all of their respective tushes. Nobody knows the trouble I've caused. So pardon me while I pardon myself. They say we prey on the planet. We just sap it all. They say we don't pay. Just go in and grab it all. They say we don't serve the public interest. Hey, look, if you want to have interest, first thing, gotta have capital. Oh, we've got General Motors, Philip Morris, Dow Jones, Procter & Gamble, you lose. No middle-class workers here flip some burgers while we give all you greens and blues. High-level greens on a need-to-know basis. So if you don't mind, I'll kind of take the fifth. I'd love to tell you, but freedom isn't free. And besides, there's always national security.
And that was Dave Lippmann from his album I Hate Walmart, the CD, no less. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I really had you going there for a while. 96.3 FM. This is your somewhat addled host, Bathrop's Pierre Robert Norse. Call-in numbers, if you want to reach this show, maybe get a little sense to some of the nonsense, is 427-3772. That's our studio line. It's open sometimes, and this is one of those times, so come on in and let us hear from you. In case you want to get us on the web page, we're at www.microradio.net/FRSC, and we are streaming on the web. In case you're not at a place where you can easily get us in Santa Cruz, because we do have limited broadcast range, you should go to www.microwave.net/FRSC, and on that page, click on MP3 Streaming Audio, which takes you to a page that gives directions on how to download the player, and then you can hear us wherever you are in the world, as long as you have access to the Internet, provided no more than five people are listening to the show at that time. And that's information I would like everybody to have, because some people are beyond the range of Free Radio and really are interested in this show and in other shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also reach Free Radio at P.O. Box 7507 if you got loop tapes, news, money, demo tapes, you name it. P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. And, of course, there's an email address, frsc@microradio.net. Voicemail I've given you. And the current studio line is still open, 427-3772. Let me run through some announcements here, so those of you who are interested in going to such things like candidate rallies, like meetings, can be reminded or advised as to what's happening. There is a city council meeting on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. This will be the first meeting in 6 weeks of the city council, and that is in the usual time. They're having a litigation session meeting at noon when, watch out, acquisition of the Dolphin property is coming up. That's the housing for apartment building for hundreds of Spanish-speaking Hispanic people who are now likely to be turned over lock, stock, and barrel to Mercy Charities Housing in the so-called infamous Dolphin Lee Project, from which the Lee people have been cut out because they formed a union, they formed a group They opposed it. They got together with the owner of the property and said, hold it. We want guarantees you're not going to kick us out before we march supinely forward under the leadership of Redevelopment Agency Director Cecil Cirillo, Council Member Tim Fitzmaurice, and the lot. Anyway, that's coming up at 12 noon on Tuesday. To skip back, at 9 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday, Board of Supervisors meets, and Steve Argue and others, including myself, will be speaking about safe sleeping zones, Tuesday, 9 o'clock. City Council meets at 7 o'clock, and we'll be talking about that in just a moment, 7 o'clock in the evening, that is.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I wanted to make another announcement. Since you talked about Arnie Left's kickoff party, Emily Riley is also having a kickoff party today. She's at her kickoff is at 5 to 7 p.m. today at 660 Escalona Drive. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the cross street is, but Escalona does cross Bay Street.
So it's kind of up there on the west side, perhaps near Emily's Bakery. Emily, of course, is a mm-hmm. west side merchant who has made some friendly sounding noises to the changing the sleeping ban. She was a part of the sugar working group back in May and June that only let select activists in the so-called safe sleeping zones. But strangely, I heard no protest from her whatsoever when Catherine Byers and Mike Rotkin just gutted the zones at 1 o'clock in the morning on June 28th. So I don't know what her story is. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can find out 5 to 7 at 660 Escalona mm-hmm. for those of you who want to go out there and sample some of the food and the rhetoric.
Yeah, I think you take Mission Street to Bay, turn right on Bay, or go uphill on Bay, I should say, because I don't know which direction you'd be coming from, and then to Escalona. I don't know if you make a right or a left at that point, but it is 660 is the address.
Well, I appreciate that information there, producer.
Sure, and I'll be looking forward to hearing Jerry Henry. He's planning on calling in shortly. So.
All right. Jerry Henry, as most of you probably know, is a street preacher. Preacher isn't the word. Minister. He doesn't really stand up and make speeches. He's around kind of trying to help young people on the streets. He's the only person I know in the entire county of Santa Cruz who's ever been held twice on a $100,000 bail for the crime, if you will, of, in essence, advising people about their rights in a fashion that offends merchants, First Alarm Security, and I guess it also was the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company and the Rancho Liquor Store out there in the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. He was accused of interfering with a business, not by being in the business, but being outside the business. And he was tried on a whole series of trumped-up charges, found guilty on a few. The main conspiracy charge was dropped. He's looking for a retrial. I guess it was a hung jury on that last charge. Some of the charges were dropped. He is, and I've seen him in action, he's an outspoken man, but he's a man who is simply trying to maintain his right to be in the community, his right to help young people, and they testified in significant numbers that he had helped them get off of drugs, if you will, heroin, to understand that they're right, that they have a right to be in public spaces, even if First Alarm security guards tell them to move on. And if, as a consequence for his courage, he has been relentlessly persecuted and barred from the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. And if I had more time and energy and there were more people involved in organizations I work with, I would have pickets out there right now in front of those businesses, and I would be trying to do what he did and show Rancho Del Mar and the people in those businesses that they can't get away with criminalizing people for essentially offending their right-wing sensibilities in public. I think it's a disgrace. And his he will be coming up in late September for a motion for retrial and also a sentencing hearing. And the reason I mention him is today is his birthday. And I've not been particularly good at announcing people's birthdays on the air because really I believe birthdays should be celebrations of the women who gave birth, not the people who just happened to be born on that particular day. I think we should really be calling Jerry Henry's mother and congratulating her for her good work, for having this guy and bringing him up over the years. And generally, I think these celebrations should be celebrations of the women who had the children. That's what, so I call it birthing days. On your birthday, it's your mother's birthing day. But that's just my thought on that. But I do think Jerry should be patted on the back for his work, so I'm also going to wish him a happy birthday. He should be calling in soon, and I hope he will call in. I don't have his number here, so I hope that he understands that he's supposed to call in, because he can't get us out there. And I'm going to try to think of something we can do for him. With all these bogus kicking off parties for meaningless candidates who are going to give us more of the same rhetoric and disappointment that we got from the last bunch of so-called reformers, Fitzmaurice, Cronin, Sugar, I think it's important we remember true heroes in our community who have stood up, often alone, against really overwhelming, powerful forces to say no to police state tactics, which is what we face here in 2000 in Santa Cruz and Aptos and California and the United States and indeed around the world. So hopefully he will be calling in soon. I've talked a bit about the Green Party fiasco yesterday. You know, I didn't mention that David Silva was sitting right next to my old pal and his buddy Tim Fitzmaurice, the Green Party's great victorious city council member, the one the Green Party refuses to publicly hold accountable for his incredible abandonment of basic human rights stances, whether it be the sleeping ban, which Fitzmaurice abandoned on July 25th by voting to table his own resolution that would have allowed the voters some option to vote on the sleeping ban, by actually proposing an absurd resolution, the one that he tabled, which was to allow people to sleep outside on the sidewalk but not in vehicles, because he was so afraid of offending the people, small pressure groups in the Harvey West and in the West Side, and wasn't willing to publicly advocate and say, look, we have a crisis here. People need affordable housing, and right now in Santa Cruz, get it, affordable housing is a car, and people have to have the right to sleep in their vehicles, provided they're not violating other laws. He wouldn't do that. Instead, he wouldn't make changes I call it bogus, but what it was a show amendment, to put on the ballot, an initiative measure from the city council, which was simply meant to satisfy the people who had been fasting and protesting, to pretend to be satisfying those people, but not to make meaningful changes. And then when push came to shove, he voted against his own initiative, and he wouldn't even allow discussion and meaningful amendment of his initiative. And Christopher Crone, I would like to say, led this disgraceful performance on July 25th, and still has not given any adequate answer for why he did this. So, Fitzmaurice sat next to David Silva at this Green Party meeting, and I continue to find myself slightly ill as the Green Party continues to fellow travel with a man who has betrayed them. He's also betrayed them on the Dolphin Lee, where he has led this whole process of planning the eviction of people without any community process or significant tenant input. We have an incoming call. Perhaps Tim Fitzmaurice is calling in to talk about this for the first time. But alas, no. It is a dial tone. So if you called in and missed the boat here, call again. I'll definitely pick up the line. I think the Green Party has to hold its elected politicians accountable, or it makes no difference if it has a litmus test, and this actually is a good thing the Green Party has. I was told the Green Party says that 60% of a person's eligibility for Green Party endorsement will be whether they support ending the sleeping ban, just to make sure that they do support it. And yet Fitzmaurice, who is not moving to end the sleeping ban, who could be pushing for resolutions even now, investigations into why the police department sabotaged the whole process 3 months ago by sending people to non-existent safe sleeping zones, by telling people that they would not enforce any laws in those zones, by creating a false hubbub there around the whole issue, and terrifying Catherine Byers, so she turned the other way, and then her little rabbit friends, Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and Crone, you know, hustled after her and did nothing to protect the rights of the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz. I'm raising the estimate because I think that's what we have now, 1,000 to 2,000 within the city limits of Santa Cruz. So we have if the Green Party won't hold its own Fitzmaurice accountable, then who should believe or care about who they endorse, particularly when they're so naive or so indifferent as to endorse someone as abusive of people's rights as Arnie Leff? Arnie Leff is a personable person. But as an individual who had a responsibility to the community around ahead of the Citizens Police Review Board, he's shown his record. And if the Green Party doesn't want to look at his record and instead wants to just push its own capital G candidates, I'm sorry, we part company here. And again, Leff is having a kickoff rally right now as I speak. It's at the Adobe at the top of the hill and at the Mission Street Plaza there near the St. Francis, the church on High Street, whatever the name of that large church we can see from everywhere in town, overlooks the town clock, you may recall, from the hill. It's at the Adobe. So go to check that out if you'd like. It's from 12 to 3 today, the Leff kickoff rally. And now we have a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
That's Holy Cross Church.
Oh, thank you, producer.
Well, at least somebody is listening to the show. I'm glad to hear that. That's Holy Cross, so you get near Holy Cross, listen for the signs of partying, and that hopefully will be Arnie Leff's kickoff party, and tell him that there's better things for him to do in the medical marijuana world than essentially destroy his credibility by among people who care on other issues by going into politics at city council. Arnie Leff, incidentally, has not come out against the drug war in this campaign either. So the great medical marijuana supporter apparently draws the line at a very key point. And you might ask him about that if you show up at his kickoff rally. Homeless Working Group is a group of people who've been working with Michael Schmidt and others. Schmidt's actually been providing the room to work in at the Chamber of Commerce's, Area Chamber of Commerce's headquarters at the Holiday Inn. Schmidt himself is the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. Maybe we should demand he contribute half his salary to the homeless. I'm going to have to work on that one. But what he's done so far is he's been one of the very few public figures who has stood up repeatedly and put a lot of energy into working for first Safe Sleeping Places, then Safe Sleeping Zones, then support of David Silva's initiative. And I think individually he probably supports ending the sleeping ban generally, although I'd have to actually call him and get him to give a specific position on that. And that it was a very courageous position for an individual who heads the Chamber of Commerce to take, because he certainly is...